This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and London editor of the Irish Times, Dennis Staunton. So what next for unionism? This week, the new DUP leader, Edwin Poots, insisted his party is not divided, despite a heated meeting which took place to confirm him as the next leader. What went on in this meeting, Dennis?
What went on was two things, really. First of all, he was confirmed, but there was a bit of a procedural dispute as to whether they should have the vote on a secret ballot or a public vote. And his critics wanted a secret ballot. And the reason they said they wanted it was because they said there had been some intimidation of his opponents. And according to one report, Geoffrey Donaldson, who was the man he defeated for the leadership, told the meeting that some of his campaign team had received threats from the loyalist paramilitary organisation, the UDA. And so there were these rather serious allegations going round. They eventually, the Poots people defeated the motion to have a secret ballot. They had a public ballot. He won by 70-something votes to 20-something votes. So it was a convincing victory, but there was some opposition. And then before he got up to speak, Geoffrey Donaldson and a number of other senior figures in the party, Nigel Dodds, Diane Dodds, Gavin Robinson, the MP for East Belfast, they left the meeting before he actually spoke.
So, James, a disunited party.
Yes, and I mean, there is a... If one's making a crude historical parallel, one would say that the danger is that the Brexit is doing to the DUP what the Good Friday Agreement did to the Ulster Unionist Party, but it is dividing it and pulling it apart. And I think this comes at a particularly dangerous moment for the DUP because now Northern Ireland is a very unpolled part of the United Kingdom, which means that in Westminster, if you don't like the results of the opinion poll, there'll be enough one along in a minute, so you don't need to worry about it. In Northern Ireland, these Lucid Talk polls hang around, and I think a Lucid Talk poll probably substantially did for Arlene Foster as First Minister for quite some time. And a Lucid Talk poll that came out last weekend in the Belfast Telegraph suggested that two-thirds of DUP voters wanted Geoffrey Donaldson and showed the UUP within 2 points of DUP. And I mean, the significance of this is that in the great shift from the UUP to the DUP, Arlene Foster and Geoffrey Donaldson played a crucial role. They defected from the UUP to the DUP. And this was seen as a sign of two things. One, that the UUP was losing the future of unionism. And secondly, that the DUP were now a party that was serious about power. Now, Arlene Foster has said that the DUP is no longer the party she joined. And I think in some ways that is an exaggeration. It's worth remembering who was leader of the DUP when she joined the DUP. But I think in terms of a seriousness about power, there might be something to this. And I mean, the interesting question now is, can the Ulster Unionist Party, which has just the assumption in UK politics has just been that it is dead, it is unrevivable, can it now revive? And I think there are some interesting questions. And I think the thing that has been discussed by lots of people in Westminster, and interestingly by people who are friends of Arlene Foster in Westminster, is, you know, do Geoffrey Donaldson and Arlene Foster re-rat, to borrow the phrase from Winston Churchill? Do they go back to the UUP? And I think if they did, I think that would have some very interesting political implications, because given the current split in the unionist vote between the TUV, the DUP and the UUP, that could conceivably make the UUP in the next, you know, Lucid Talk poll in this world where polls matter, the largest unionist bloc.
Dennis, what did you make of Arlene Foster's parting comments?
I thought she was signalling very clearly that the direction that Edwin Poots is taking the DUP is one that is, first of all, not acceptable to her. And obviously she's very, very unhappy about the way she was treated. But I think the other point is that there's a question as to whether this is an election-winning strategy to go back to the Paisleyite roots of the party in terms of its tone and in terms of some of its policies. Is that actually going to be a winning formula? And so I think one of the options, say, for people like Geoffrey Donaldson, would be actually just to sit there and to torment Edwin Poots in the way that he tormented Arlene Foster, and wait for the next assembly elections when he is likely to do badly and then be toppled and take over. That's one option. Another is to go back to the Ulster Unionist Party. Doug Beattie, the new leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, said the day after the Poots meeting that he would welcome people to come into the Unionist Party, the Ulster Unionist Party, but only if they accepted the vision of that party, so that he didn't want this just to be a refuge for disgruntled members of the DUP. But he also said that he's friendly with Geoffrey Donaldson, that he would speak to him at any stage, and then, but he would have to make a calculation as to whether it was in the interest of the Ulster Unionist Party to have Geoffrey Donaldson back or not. A third option would be for people like Geoffrey Donaldson and perhaps Arlene Foster to form a new party. And one of the interesting features of all of this politically in Northern Ireland is that the electoral system for all elections in Northern Ireland, except the elections to the Westminster Parliament, which is first past the post, it is a single transferable vote. So what you do is you have one vote, but you order in preferences, and then your votes can transfer. And so it's important if they have multi-seat constituencies, and usually a big party will get at least one seat there. But when it comes to the final seat in the constituency, a willingness to transfer to a party can be very important. And so in Northern Ireland, there are very few nationalists who would want to transfer a vote to the DUP, very few unionists who would want to transfer a vote to the Sinn Féin. But then within the centre, a party like Alliance, a party like the Ulster Unionist Party, as Doug Beattie is presenting it, as a new liberal unionist party, which is relaxed about things like women's rights, LGBT rights, you know, and is interested in the environment, essentially a modern party, and that also a party that's prepared to reach out across the communities. A party like that could find themselves transfer-friendly, so people who would vote for the soft nationalist party, the SDLP, might be much more willing to transfer to them than to the DUP. And that can, in the end, mean that you end up getting much more seats than you would otherwise.
And James, on the subject of Brexit, Northern Ireland Protocol, they're having reports that this is now affecting medicine.
Yeah, so there is a cancer drug, and it's a kind of complicated question because the EMA, the European Medicines Agency, had approved it for use against one form of cancer. The UK regulator had approved it for use against two forms of cancer. And it became an issue as to whether the Northern Ireland Protocol was going to stop patients in Northern Ireland receiving it for lung cancer, which is what the UK regulator approved, but the EMA had not approved. Now, this is all a proxy, really, for the coming argument against COVID booster shots, because the argument goes, based on past performance, the UK will be quicker to approve these COVID booster shots than the European Medicines Agency will be. And the argument to be made that the Northern Ireland Protocol might leave people in Northern Ireland not getting booster shots that people in Scotland, Wales and England were getting. Now, it looks like, from Tony Connolly, RTE's highly respected Brussels correspondent's reporting today, and from the conversations I've had, I think this is accurate, that there is basically a deal being done, which is to accept that medicines are an essential function of the state. And because the responsibility for health and public health continues to lie with the UK government under the protocol, that basically any drug that gets approved for use in the UK will be approved for use in Northern Ireland, although obviously you couldn't take it over the border into the Republic. And I think this actually does hint at one of the ways you can resolve some of these protocol standoffs, which is a more expansionist definition of what the essential function of a state is, would allow the Westminster government to reassure unionism that you are going to get the same benefits as people in England, Scotland and Wales, but wouldn't require the EU to look like they were rewriting the protocol. Now, I think this is particularly important because in the psychology of unionism, when unionism doesn't trust the Westminster government, it goes into quite a paranoid and dark place. And ultimately, Doug Beattie's project with the Ulster Unionist Party cannot succeed unless unionist opinion is reconciled to the Westminster government and what it has done with the protocol. I think as long as the protocol is a sore, then it's very hard to see how liberal unionism works, because Northern Irish unionists, when they don't trust the British government, do not go to a liberal place. They go to a more concerned and more protections, you know, more circle the wagons kind of place. And so I think in a way, if you are, if the political realignment and possible unionist realignment in Northern Ireland we were talking about earlier can only happen if you can make the protocol palatable. And I mean, this is a hint as to how that might be possible to do.
Yeah, I think that these technical talks on issues like the one that James was talking about and about some other irritations, like about bringing plants into Northern Ireland, these seem to be making some progress. The problem is that the biggest difficulty with the protocol and the biggest number of checks are around food and animal safety. And this is where there is still a big political problem. One of the interesting things that happened, though, during Edwin Poots's election was that in his acceptance speech, he said that getting a unionist majority in the assembly election next year was the only way to avoid a border poll, and it was the only way to get rid of the Northern Ireland Protocol. So that appears to be an acceptance that the Northern Ireland Protocol is going to remain for the next year. And one of the things that the Europeans are unhappy about is that they feel that unionism was actually on a path towards acceptance, and that they, the Europeans, were prepared to do a certain amount to accommodate them and their concerns. But that the British government, particularly David Frost and Brandon Lewis and some of their public statements recently, have been encouraging unionists to believe that they can get rid of the protocol or make bigger changes to the protocol than are actually practical. And I think that when they hear what Edwin Poots has to say, that might reinforce that feeling on their part.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.